Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 a.m. on a Monday morning. And Monday morning means that we take a look at the box office and we review the new movies. Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join me every Monday morning to discuss the box office and to take a look at the new movies and review them. Phone number is 312-981-7200. You could send your texts there as well. And you can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. So let's welcome Colin and Eric to the show. There's Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right. So let's take a look, as we do, at the box office for this week. For the weekend here, the three-day total, number one is Home with $54 million. That's the new DreamWorks animated film, which we will review. Any surprise there at how much that one made, Eric?
I think people thought it was overperformed a little bit. No one was really surprised that it was number one, but it actually did a little bit better than expected.
Okay. And then number two is Get Hard, the new Will Ferrell, Kevin Hart movie with $34.6 million. That's about what was expected, right?
What did you think? Mid-30s was seemed to be what everyone was sort of thinking.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of break it down here in the box office about some of the Will Ferrell releases from the past. So you got Talladega Nights opened with $47 million. Now Talladega Nights, that came out, did that one come out, was that pretty much the one right after Anchorman?
Yes.
That's why that's why it opened at $47 million.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. People caught on with Anchorman, it was a couple of years after Anchorman, but it was the first sort of big Will Ferrell movie after that, so that obviously it caught on with home video and whatnot.
Right.
So.
Well, because Anchorman, when Anchorman came out, it did okay, right, at the box office?
It did fairly well. It didn't crack $100 million at the box office. It opened pretty decently. But
it was video. It was video and cable that did it, right?
Yes, totally.
Yeah, I mean, because that movie now has like a, you know, obviously they made a sequel last year,
right?
But yeah, I mean, I remember when the movie first came out, I was desperately trying to convince people to go see it, and they were like, "No, I'm not going to see that. It was stupid." Looking movie, and then, like, you know, 5 months later it's on video and they're like, "This is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life."
Right.
I was trying to tell you that 6 months ago. Next is my favorite Will Ferrell movie of all time is The Other Guys.
That's your favorite one.
Oh man, please. Yeah, 35.
Well, I mean, I love it, but
maybe Anchorman is still my favorite. I mean, but The Other Guys, that movie kills me every time I watch it, and one of the main reasons is because I think Mark Wahlberg is genius in it.
Yeah, it's one of his best performances.
Oh my god! I mean, like he is unbelievable. He's the funniest thing in the movie. I mean, you've got Will Ferrell. You've got first of all, you've got the demise of Samuel L. Jackson. The Rock is classic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's one of the funniest moments. I remember the first time seeing it. When they jump off that building, I almost peed myself. It was so funny. So Get Hard comes in right after that. Blades of Glory with $33 million. Elf with $31 million. Step Brothers with $30.9 million. Anchorman with $28.4 million. The Campaign, $26.5 million. Anchorman 2 with Wow, Anchorman 2 only did $26.2 million on its opening weekend?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
wow.
I think it opened on a Wednesday, actually. So, like, the opening weekend was a little lesser than expected, just because it opened on a Wednesday, so it was already 2 days into its release.
Yeah,
so that's kind of why. So yeah. It's a little bit of a cheat, those numbers, but
okay, all right. Now, at this time of year, is spring break becoming a viable time to release movies?
Oh, I think any time in March, people are studios are looking for an angle. I mean, you've seen, you know, I mean, this is where Hunger Games started. Obviously, you know, they tried the Divergent films here, and, you know, I mean, Alice in Wonderland a few years ago. So, yes, spring break is a really good time. I mean, it's really only a week. Maybe 2 weeks, depending on when, you know, all the schools aren't exactly synced up to that. But no, you know, March is, you know, for a few years now has been some time when you try to release a franchise type movie.
Okay. What are the other big sort of animated films? When do they start coming out?
You're not really going to have anything big until later this summer. I mean, the next even sort of family film at all, even sort of like PG rated to come out now after Home, is Tomorrowland, the George Clooney film, the Brad Bird film, comes out Memorial Day weekend. Then after that, basically, you're looking at sort of Inside Out, the new Pixar film, and then Minions in July. So Home's got some, you know, room in front of it to sort of just kind of take all the family audience money for the next several months, which is kind of what The Croods did a few years ago.
Oh, right. Yeah. So Home came in at number one at $54 million. Get Hard came in at 34.6. And then, of course, the full title, the Divergent series Insurgent, made $22 million, bringing its total up to $86 million. Is that underperforming, you think?
It's under the pace of what Divergent did last year. It's actually $8 million behind the pace of where that film was last year. So, yeah, it's dropping bigger than that film did. And that one did $150 million. So this one's probably, you know, on its way to looking around like maybe $125,
$130. Okay. All right. Coming in number four is Cinderella with $17 million, bringing its total up to $150 million. That's doing well.
Yeah, that's a hit for sure, for certain.
Yeah. Well, number five, I think, is the success story of the week.
It really is, actually.
It's. By the way, I did see it.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap.
holy crap.
Great holy crap. Number five is It Follows, which made $4 million, bringing its total up to $4.7 million. Tell us about that, the release of this one. I mean, it's only playing in like three theaters here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really sort of interesting story because the studio that released this is released by Radius, which is a division of the Weinstein Company. It was a division that they created. It was kind of like the new like Dimension, where they were releasing a lot of genre stuff.
Yeah,
and they've ended up, you know, they've expanded their base a little bit, but the Radius brand has been primarily mostly as money is made from video on demand releases, and they get very limited theatrical releases. The biggest release that Radius put out was actually last summer with Snowpiercer. That was the biggest launch that studio has ever put out in theaters, and that was only 356 theaters nationwide.
Mm.
So that was the biggest launch that the studio ever had. And now they've released, because the reviews and It Follows have been so stellar, and there's been such a sort of demand for it, and the word of mouth since Toronto has just been incredible. It went from 32 theaters last week, and they released it wide, the first wide release ever in their 2.5-year history, to 1,218 screens. So, I mean, $4 million by any other standards doesn't seem that big a deal, but now with, like, $4.7 million the movie has made, and the next... In the next like 2 days, It Follows is going to be the biggest theatrical grosser in the history of Radius Films.
Wow, and deservedly so. Man, it's good. It's so good.
It's too bad they didn't do that with Snowpiercer last year.
Yeah, we know that there's, you know, all the sort of controversy with Snowpiercer and how they wanted to release that at one point. So I think, you know, I think they got the compromise as good as they could possibly do, I guess. And Snowpiercer did fairly well for them theatrically, but
well, you know,
the
thing is, it's Snowpiercer had some big names in it.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't. I mean,
right.
It Follows.
Yeah, that's another thing. They probably missed capitalizing. This is probably like their response to Snowpiercer. in a way, because the people who were passionate about Snowpiercer were very passionate.
Well, it's a terrific movie.
Let them know
terrific
about
movie.
It.
Yeah.
Right. And I think because they probably realized somewhere, you know, if they swallow their egos a little bit, that they probably missed the boat by being able to capitalize on, you know, Chris Evans' name. You know, just like, hey, we got Captain America in this film that everybody loves just a few months after Winter Soldier came out.
Right.
So they probably swallowed a couple million. I think it did fairly well on VOD, obviously. But you know, now it follows. You know, I think is it on VOD this week?
Did no,
it, hit? It didn't. Okay,
no.
So the, you know, they kept it out of there.
Yeah,
so,
it's still just theatrical. So yeah.
Yeah, no, they're gonna make a nice little coin on this.
Well, I mean, if you, it's a really good movie. It's just really creepy, man. It's so creepy. Okay, number six is Kingsman, The Secret Service, the movie that won't die.
Right.
$119 million this thing has made. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, $300 million worldwide.
Isn't that crazy? No, who would have expected that?
No, every week we ask, and we don't have an answer.
I know. Number seven is Run All Night, $2.2 million. Pretty disappointing, Liam Neeson actioner. But I mean, no, I mean, money-wise, I thought it was good. I actually liked the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's Walk Among the Tombstones money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Eight is the second best Exotic Marigold Hotel with $2.1 million, bringing its total up to 28. Number nine, I don't even know what the hell this is. Do You Believe? We talked about this last week. I don't know what it is. It made $7 million. And then, wow, The Gunman. What a tank. Boy, did that tank. $2 million, bringing its total up to 8.8 million.
Yeah.
Hey, where's SpongeBob, man?
It's out of the top 10.
Oh,
finally.
No.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him living
People
in that.
Moved on. The home officially pushed it out.
Oh, man. I feel bad for him living in his pineapple under the sea. All right. So Home is your big winner at 54 million. Get Hard did strong numbers with 34.6, and we will review those movies and more. Coming up here on 720 WGN, we got the box office. We took care of the box office, and now we'll have these guys hang on. You guys hang out, okay?
Okay.
When we come back, it's time to review the new movies right here on 720 WGN, which we do every Monday morning. And it's Nick DiGilio. We shall return. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Monday morning, and that means that we are reviewing the new movies. It also means that my dad will be telling a joke a little bit later on. He will call in, and it's a jokey, 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 jokey time. So that's coming up. But right now we're talking with Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com. And we are talking about the new movies. And we welcome... Oh, that was a mistake. There we go. Hi, guys. Hi.
Hi.
All right, welcome back. Colin, why don't you tell us about... I did not see this movie, but I was just looking at the synopsis of it. It's called Kimiko the Treasure Hunter.
Yeah.
Perhaps one of the craziest synopses I've ever read for a movie. Tell everybody about this.
All right, well, here's the thing. I've read a lot of reviews, and I've seen the trailer for this film, and everyone's kind of seems to be reluctant to give away the movie that this movie is referring to.
Well, it's, so, you know, I'm at IMDb. Yeah. I'm at IMDb right now, and it's in the first sentence.
All right, fine. All right.
I mean, you kind of know what it is 15 minutes into the movie,
know,
if not earlier.
Right, but they deliberately leave it out of the trailer completely.
All right. Well, I mean, it's in. I mean, I'm looking at. That's one of the reasons why when I read the synopsis, I was like, "What?"
Right.
But you can go ahead. You can go ahead.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is based on an urban legend that has to do with the film Fargo. Kimiko, the treasure hunter, she's played by Rinko Kikuchi, the Japanese actress you might remember from Babel and Pacific Rim. She's kind of a lonely woman with this sort of lifeless, offless job and who really doesn't belong anywhere. And one day she's out on a beach and she discovers this VHS tape buried, in the crevices of this little cave. And she takes it home and she finds on there is a really beat up, ratty old copy of Fargo. She watches it all the way through. You know, at the very beginning of that movie, it says this is a true story.
Right.
And she takes it as just that. And so he is convinced that there is a treasure buried deep in the middle of Minnesota, or Fargo, I should say, Fargo, North Dakota. So against all conventional wisdom, she sets out to America to hunt for this treasure, you know, this suitcase full of money that was buried, you know, towards the end of that film. She doesn't have much in the way of money or warm clothes. Of course, she'll need that. And she meets a lot of people along the way who are, you know, more than willing to help her, while also telling her that film is fake. It's not real. But she insists that it is real. And so basically the movie, you know, the crux of the movie is she right or is she wrong? That seems to be, that becomes the hook that keeps viewers along for how far the movie will go to align itself with this American classic. And I was along for it. I was. But I think the movie's a little misleading, or at least the title and the trailer are a little misleading. It makes it seem like this kind of crazy adventure film, and it's really not. It's very low-key, very subtle character study of this woman who is just, you know, maybe a little nuts, but definitely determined to follow through on this odyssey. It's a beautifully photographed film. If you get a chance to see it on the big screen, you should. So it definitely takes after Fargo in that respect. But it's not, you know, it's not going through the motions of like trying to remind you of everything in Fargo. It's just a movie that is just kind of this little urban legend that has to do with it. And the movie doesn't try to do anything else but that. I think it runs a little bit too long after a while. It's kind of like, okay, come on, let's get to it already. Is she going to find this thing or what? And, you know, it's a little disconcerting, especially if you've seen the TV show Fargo, which also makes reference to, you know, also makes direct reference to this suitcase full of money. Nevertheless, this is you know, a movie that I think exists in its own little world, as simple-minded as the plot may be. I found it quite interesting, and I love Riko Kikuchi anyway, and I thought this was a pretty terrific performance by her, and a film that's just a little odd, and, you know, I was along for it, though.
Okay. All right. Eric?
Yeah, I have I have a major problem with this film. I will echo what Colin said, that the film is really kind of beautifully photographed. Then also agree that the film also goes on too long for basically what it is. I mean, it's about 105 minutes long. This easily could have been an 85-minute movie and still really got the point across about this woman who is clearly very lonely, looking for some sort of purpose in her life, and then this sort of weird adventure that she goes on. But my main sort of issue with this film is that clearly we are following a woman who is mentally ill in some capacity. Whatever sort of lyrical quirkiness this film thinks it's having at her expense, I think that there's something really troubling about watching a character like this go through the motions when we as a viewer familiar with the movie Fargo, or just familiar with the idea that it's a movie to begin with, that we know that where this journey is going to end in some respect. And the way this movie actually ends actually is even more disconcerting and even further troubling, in the way that they sort of, you know, there's sort of an upbeat conclusion to this thing, especially when you learn about the actual urban legend that it's based on, that, you know, whatever this woman that Kumiko is based on clearly had some issues and actually died in her journey. So not really giving anything away there in the movie, but that's just the way the story end, the real story end. And then the urban legend was sort of attached that she was actually going after this money that from Fargo. That actually is, you know, we don't know if that's true. But like I said, I was very, you know, the movie gets to a point where it's very slow. It sort of goes through the motions. I thought the movie was going to pick up a little bit when she meets another fellow Fargo police officer, but that relationship doesn't last very long and actually sort of reinforces the idea of this woman's state of mind. So I was actually very kind of disturbed in a bad way by this movie, and I didn't really like what the filmmakers were doing with the story or the character. So
okay. All right, so that's Kimiko, the Treasure Hunter, which is playing only at the Music Box currently. All right, I understand that neither of you saw Danny Collins.
No.
Nope.
Okay, I will quickly tell you about Danny Collins then, because I did see it. It is the latest film starring Al Pacino, and he plays like this rock star who used to be very, very popular in the 70s, and he's an aging rock star who, you know, has, you know, like every rock star who's in the 70s has had the hard living with the women and the booze and the drugs and all that stuff. His manager is played by Christopher Plummer, who, by the way, is phenomenal in this movie. Best part of the movie, in my opinion. And he discovers this old letter that was never delivered to Al Pacino's character, Danny Collins, from John Lennon, like a fan letter from John Lennon. And when he sees this letter, Pacino decides to change his life and make amends for all the stuff that he's done in the past and try to rediscover his family and reunite with his son, played by Bobby Cannavale. And I'm pronouncing his name wrong, isn't it?
Cannavale.
Okay.
Yeah.
So so he decides to reunite with him, and of course, obviously, because they're estranged, you know, there's a lot of tension between them and all that stuff. And he ends up staying in a hotel that is managed by Annette Bening's character, and then they sort of have like a little sort of romance thing. Best stuff in the movie is, well, I mean, the best thing in the movie is Christopher Plummer, but there is really a lot of fun chemistry between Pacino and Annette Bening. And Annette Bening, can I just say, Annette Bening is like one of the most sort of charming actresses ever. Can I just say that? I mean,
sure.
I mean, you know, I mean, look, you go back to The American President. How luminous is she in that movie?
Maybe the most luminous performance ever.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And she's so good, and she's got that thing going in this movie. You know, whatever that thing that she has is, she's got it going in this movie. Pacino seems to be having fun. It's the, you know, it's I think it's one of the best performances he's given in a long time. I know he's done a lot of crap, you know, in the last few years. But I like this movie. I you know, I thought that it was written by Dan Fogel. He also directed it. Dan Fogelman, who is responsible for Crazy Stupid Love, who wrote Crazy Stupid Love. He didn't direct it, but he wrote it. And it's got those kind of elements. It's that weird, because, you know, like, you know how Crazy Stupid Love kind of jumped between tones?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, one minute it could be, like, really over the top and sort of funny, and then the next it could be really sad and then, like, farcical. And it just jumped all over the place in terms of tone. Same thing with this movie. Jennifer Garner is pretty good in it as well. She plays Bobby Cannavale's wife in the movie. And then he reconnects with his granddaughter at this point because Bobby Cannavale has, like, so it's about rediscovery, and it's all about this guy who decides to change, you know, the latter part of his life because of this letter from John Lennon, which I think is a nice premise. So so I liked it. I thought Danny Collins was good, and I recommend it. And again, you know, like, it's nice to see Pacino doing some work where he's not going, hey, you know, for an hour and a half. So I, you know, and again, you know, Annette Bening is awesome in it, and that chemistry that they have is great. But it's gotten to the point now where if you just put Christopher Plummer in a movie, he's going to rule. That's pretty much it, as far as I'm concerned. He's fantastic. He's got all the, you know, like, he plays. He, you know, when you look at a script and you go, oh, well, that's the juicy role.
Yeah,
that's the
yeah.
one. He's got it all.
Okay.
It's all plumber. So there you go. All right, we got to take a break. We got a couple of more movies we got to talk about. Colin and Eric are here from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com. Everybody hang on. When we come back, we'll review more of the new movies right here on 720 WGN.
Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out with Steve Cochran and the gang on a Monday morning. Coming up later on, it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. My dad will call in and tell a joke, but right now we are being visited by Colin Suter and Eric Childress to review the new movies, and we've got a couple of more to review, and we welcome the guys back. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right, let's see. Eric, why don't you tell us about... Well, first of all, I want to mention Serena. None of us have seen this movie.
No.
But it's like the... Is it the third movie or the fourth movie with Bradley Cooper
and Lawrence?
And Jennifer Lawrence. The third, right? Yeah, third. Because it's Silver Linings Playbook and then American Hustle.
But I think they're both... Are they both in the next David O. Russell movie, too?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. But I've read not good things about this Serena.
I've heard even worse things than that.
Yeah. It's a period piece, and they play a couple again.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't a couple in American Hustle, but they were a couple Silver Linings, and so I guess from what I've read, though, it's not very good.
Yeah.
Now, did you see? It played some festivals, right, Eric?
No, they kind of kept it away from festivals. This movie's been sitting on the proverbial shelf for quite some time.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was actually filmed. Filmed before American Hustle, even. I think. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's been sitting out there for a while, and I think it played one international fest, but. Nothing here in the States.
Okay. Didn't light anything up over the weekend either. So
no.
There you go. All right.
Only playing at Landmark Century. So
Landmark Century at Clark and Diversity in Chicago if you would like to check out Serena with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. So there you go. All right. Well, let's see. Hey, Colin, why don't you tell us about Home? And Eric, you haven't seen it.
I have not.
Okay. All right, Colin.
All right. All right, well, this is the latest animated film from DreamWorks and 20th Century Fox, and it's about aliens. So there's a planet of aliens called the Boobs, and they're sort of these little, like, the ghosts. They all look like the ghosts from Pac-Man, or little octopuses with these little legs and everything. And their way of life is just to run away from everything. That's what they do. And they're on the verge of running away from the Dark Overlord again, and they decide that the best place to run away to next is Earth. And when they get here, they vacuum up everyone on the planet and set them up with new homes in Australia, thinking they're doing all humans a favor. One of the Boobs is an outsider named O, and he desperately wants to fit in. And it's voiced by Jim Parsons of The Big Bang Theory. And long story short, he gets banished from his own people after accidentally letting the evil aliens know about their whereabouts on Earth. So while running through the mostly abandoned and empty cities, he meets a pretty girl and her cat. And the girl's name is Tip, and she's voiced by Rihanna. And then what ensues is sort of a buddy comedy where she's trying to get rid of him and one else of his species, since these aliens separated her from her mom. But he promises to reunite her with her mom, and so they embark on a road trip where he basically tricks out her car so that it'll fly across the Pacific Ocean. So I think, one of the things about a movie, about an alien is that the alien should be somewhat endearing so that we're sympathetic to its plight. But the main character here is anything but. I found O, his name is O, to be incredibly annoying. and just not really engaging and pretty charmless. And, you know, it just sort of kills everything else in the film, obviously, because he's carrying it. And, you know, I think, you know, the Rihanna character is, you know, pretty, you know, not very interesting. And I think, you know, it goes through the motions of a buddy comedy in a way that just, you know, offers very little in the way of surprises. I think the movie visually is, you know, pretty terrific. It's got great visual ideas in it. You know, it's a DreamWorks film, so obviously it looks good. But this is on par with, you know, a lot of the forgettable animated films we've had over the years. You know, like Epic, and, you know, Mars Needs Moms, and Brave, and, you know, pretty much every Blue Sky production. And, you know, so really this is kind of an annoying film to have to sit through, aside from some interesting visual ideas. So, you know, can't really recommend this one.
Yeah, I'm with you, Colin. I was not a fan of this. I will say visually it is nice to look at, and there are some really nice pieces of animation in it. But you're right. I don't understand the Jim Parsons thing.
I don't eat. Well, I've never once seen an episode of Big Bang Theory. I know I'm not an American. I know.
Yeah, but, no. I'm with you. I've never sat through an entire episode of Big Bang Theory. I've tried to watch it, and I've turned it off almost every time I watch it. And I just don't get the Jim Parsons thing. He seems to me to be just like a one note dude. I mean, this performance, the voice work in this sounds exactly like what he would do in an episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Right.
And Rihanna, you know, adds nothing special to it. It doesn't help that it's not a very well-written role. I thought Steve Martin was kind of funny.
Yeah.
He has some moments in it. I also found it a little bit disturbing that the aliens take over the planet, but in a non-killing way.
Right.
You know, I thought that was just kind of weird. I was like, wait a minute, what? You're trying to...
I mean, when they set that up at the beginning, I was like, okay, this could be funny because they're just kind of scooping everybody up and putting them in Australia.
Yeah.
Which, you know, okay, I guess, you know, if I'm one of those people, I go, well, all right, that's fine.
Yeah.
What's the plan here?
Yeah.
But really, I think if you're looking for, you know, a little girl and her alien movie, you got to stick with Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, I agree with you. That movie rules. Yeah. Or if you just want an alien and his, if you just want like a, well, an alien, well, not a, I'm just going to say, just go to WALL-E.
Yeah. Or E.T.
Or E.T. Yeah, there you go. All right, so no, I'm not a big fan of Home. Colin and I do not recommend it. All right, you guys, hang on. We got another movie to review here coming up after we take a break on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio. Monday morning movie reviews continue after this. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. The Monday morning movie reviews continue. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join me every Monday morning to review the movies and check out the box office. So we've got another movie to review here, and let's welcome the guys back. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right. Eric, tell us about Get Hard.
Okay. Well, this is the new Will Ferrell movie, as we had mentioned, and he has teamed up with Kevin Hart in this one. And as a story, Will Ferrell plays a very, very wealthy investment banker who one day is arrested for defrauding a lot of people out of their money. And he decides not to take a plea that his lawyers and his rich father-in-law, played by Craig T. Nelson, advise him to take. And instead, he really gets sent up the river, is going to be made an example of in San Quentin by doing the hardest time in the hardest prison with the hardest people. So worried that he's going to be violated every which way, physically, emotionally, everything in prison, he hires Kevin Hart's character, who owns a car wash company, vehicle detailing company, to basically train him in the ways that he will not be violated all these ways, in prison, basically make him a tougher guy, having believed that he, as a black man, has actually been to jail. This is not a true fact. This is just something that he assumes. So Kevin Hart's character was trying to get his daughter into a decent school, basically makes an arrangement to get the necessary money from Farrell, and agrees to put him through the ringer, if you will. And basically tries all different manners, tries to pump him up, tries to, you know, show him how to fight, basically is preparing him for the worst, including preparing him for the eventuality of sodomy in prison. So you have a film that is obviously, you know, very much in your face, dealing with a lot of sort of racial issues and stereotypes and whatnot. You really can't sort of read a review of this film, especially the negative ones, without seeing words like racism and homophobia thrown out. Even at the South by Southwest premiere, where I saw the film, one of the questionnaires in the audience actually lobbied the word racist directly at the director who was on stage. But, you know, to me, you know, first of all, I found the movie funny. I laughed, and I can't apologize for that. I think, but like a lot of comedies, you know, you either laugh or you don't, and then, you know, in a case like this, you find yourself having to defend what you laughed at. And I think this is a film that is actually more interesting to discuss on this level of the outrage that people are having over it, more than it is whether or not to say whether you laughed a lot or a little, or where you laugh, where the laughs work or don't work. I found the movie fairly funny. Maybe I'm just a Will Ferrell guy, and I laugh at just about anything he does. Kevin Hart, who has become, you know, a little bit of an annoyance over the last year and a half since his star has risen. I kind of like the idea of him playing the more of the straighter guy in this film. That eventually sort of rises some of his Kevin Hart the familiarity we have with him, and I actually found him funny in his interaction with Will Ferrell. But like I said, you know, I don't know what you guys think of the movie. But I'm sure that there's probably some interesting discussion to be had once we hear your reviews.
All right, so. All right, Colin, go ahead.
Well, Eric, I'm with you on this one.
All right.
I do. I found myself laughing. Yeah, the outrage to me, I agree. I think it's a little bit much. I mean, yes, there are things in it that you can, you know, sort of make a case that it's perpetuating stereotypes and everything. But at the same time, you know, it's a funny film, and it is kind of, you know, it is a simple-minded comedy. But at the same time, we're often saying stuff like, God, you watch Blazing Saddles, that movie could never be made today, or something like that. And it's like, well, I mean, and I'm not saying this is anywhere nearly as good as Blazing Saddles. It's not, obviously, but it is sort of, you know, taking those risks again, and it's kind of going there, going, yeah, well, you know, look, we're just going to make these jokes anyway, and if you think they're funny, great. If not, sorry, you know, we're just making a comedy here. And, you know, I'm starting to become a little, you know, I'm trying to be more okay with that, especially if it's a movie, which I think this is. I actually think Kevin Hart is actually the funnier of the two in this film. I actually enjoyed his performance more than Will Ferrell's. I think I'm starting to come around to him a little bit more. I almost recommended The Wedding Ring earlier this year, a movie that, you know, was pretty flawed but had some really funny moments in it. And I think this is the same in the film. You know, does it go anywhere unexpected? No. You know exactly what the plot is. You know, when they set up a plot, you know exactly how it's going to turn out. But I think the two of them together, I think I think they're a good team. I think they could do, you know, another movie together, maybe, you know, slightly better material. But, you know, I like Derek, you know, laughter trumps everything with a movie like this. So for me, you know, there's just enough laughter to recommend it.
Wow. I hate this movie. I think I laughed maybe once during it. I thought it was base and unfunny. I'm not going to say it's racist or homophobic, but it does. I think it does reinforce stereotypes, and I'm not going to get up, you know, on a soapbox or anything like that. But the basic thing is, I don't think it's funny. 90% of the jokes in this movie are about fear of having something stuck up your butt. That's like the entire movie is about that. And I don't know if it's not really homophobia. It's just base and stupid and not funny. I'm not a Kevin Hart fan. I think this is one of Will Ferrell's weirdest and weakest performances. The director of this movie, by the way, is a really smart screenwriter, like a really funny guy. The guy co-wrote Idiocracy.
Tropic Thunder.
He wrote Tropic Thunder, for God's sake. So, I mean, the guy's got, and there's a movie right there. If you want to talk, see, there's to me, the difference. Tropic Thunder took on a lot of borderline, you know, offensive stuff. And I think did it in a brilliant way, in a really funny way. I just don't think the stuff in this movie is funny at all, man. For me, it was torture to sit through. It was nice to see. It was nice to see Annie from Community.
My biggest complaint of the film. I think she's actually wasted and just basically she's just a pair of boobs.
I just like looking at her. She's Annie, man.
She's beautiful, and she's really funny. Alison Brie, we're talking about.
Alison Brie is she's awesome.
Yeah, she just doesn't get much to do movie.
Well,
she has like one scene that's it's nice looking at her in that one scene.
Yeah,
but that's really about all she has to do in the movie.
Yeah. So I was just saying that one of the high points for me was to get to look at her while sitting through this movie. I pretty much hated this movie. I thought it was terrible. Are people really going? I've read a little bit of things here and there about it, but are people kind of going off the rails on the racism angle?
Yes. Yeah. And it's really kind of troubling me. I mean, you just said that you think 90% of the movie is the sodomy joke.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that number's slightly inflated. Maybe I need to see the film again and maybe write down the number of jokes, because I actually thought there was a better balance. I mean, we've seen movies that have basically done the sodomy thing for, like you said, 90% of the movie.
Yeah.
And probably a couple of them are probably Adam Sandler movies. So we're used to seeing that. I think that it's a movie that is allowing people to get on their faux outrage soapboxes and not recognize. So people seem to not even know what homophobia actually is, and that there's a big difference between, you know, not wanting to be violated and worrying that that act is going to make you gay. There's a big difference between the two, and this movie kind of goes out of its way to there's a relationship that actually develops between Kevin Hart and a homosexual character in the movie, and not once is brought up that there's sort of a fear of being gay. It's just a fear of, you know, having things put in certain orifices,
right?
Which is the big difference. And as far as the racial angle is concerned, it's like, if you're going to do a movie that, whether you believe it perpetuates stereotypes or is doing a commentary on them, it's like you have to do it if you're doing comedy. If you're doing anything that's approaching satire, if you believe it fails, that's one thing. But just, if it fails, that doesn't necessarily mean it's racist.
Right.
So, Tropic Thunder, I mean, Colin brought up Blazing Saddles. I would even bring up Trading Places, which I think this movie is, you know, a little even more trying to be. But Tropic Thunder is another, you know, great example of a movie that, you know, uses stereotypes and creates wonderful satire out of it. No, this movie is not on those levels, but I don't think this movie is also on the level of, say, like a Nothing to Lose or an Amos and Andrew either. Those movies are they're not funny, and their stereotypes are actually, you know, kind of borderline racist. But this movie, I don't think, does. And I think more people are probably offended that Will Ferrell's character is innocent, you know, in the movie than anything else. I think that people are, you know, if he was, you know, like playing a guilty man and wasn't, you know, just like, oh, look, another poor white guy is, you know, being sent up the river, people wouldn't be, you know, so quick to respond with the racial angle.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't, you know.
By the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
And by the way, you know, I mean, in the movie, this character, he's being sent to San Quentin, you know, which is a maximum security prison. Ask any guy who's on their way to maximum security prison, the top three things they're most worried about when they get there. You don't think Sodom is going to be one of those things, or some kind of prison rape is going to be one of those things on that
list? Be number one on my list.
You know? Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying it's not a legitimate concern if you're going to go to right. jail.
Right, but no, but some of these reviewers are, like, glomming on to that, like Eric was saying, you know, it's like, oh, they're, all this movie cares about is getting raped in prison. It's like, well,
listen,
ask any guy who's going to go through that, of course it's going to be.
All right, you know, I mean, no. That's a legitimate concern. I just don't think 90% of the joke should be about that. That's all.
I think that's a little more even-handed, and I would even say, like, did we never learn nothing from Shawshank Redemption, where Tim Robbins is in there, and he's like, you know, I hope, you know, I don't think it would matter if they would, I told them that I wasn't homosexual, and Morgan
right.
goes,
it
well,
does,
neither are they.
No, it doesn't matter. Well, here's the other thing. One of my favorite movie of the, if you guys remember, my favorite movie of the 2000s, between 2000 and 2010.
Yeah.
Ends with a scene where the character who's about to go to jail asks his best friend to beat the crap out of him so that he doesn't look good when he gets to prison.
Yeah. I thought of that movie, too.
It's like, no, so I'm not saying, I mean, I don't think it's not legitimate. I just don't think it's handled well in here, whereas, like, in 25th Hour, it's devastating. You know what I mean?
That movie would have ended with Edward Norton asking Philip Seymour Hoffman to rape him. That would have been an interesting angle that Spike Lee could have explored.
So, anyway. All right. So Get Hard, you know, did well over the weekend, and people are going to see it, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, Will Ferrell, Kevin Hart, and it's I just hated it.
I'm so happy, Colin. I'm so happy you like the movie. I felt alone on this island that I'm just like that. I feel in a way I almost feel like I have to defend myself laughing at this movie because of the charges. Like you know, I guess Colin, we're bad people that we like.
Well,
movie,
no, right? Listen. Here's the thing. Yeah, let me
we're
just
back on that. We're back on our Dumb and Dumber 2 island.
let me just clear something up here. I'm not charging racism with this movie. I'm not charging homophobia. I know the
right.
different. I know the difference between homophobia and what the jokes are about in this movie. I just think it's bad.
Yeah, that's completely
all.
Fair. That's fine.
All right. So that's Get Hard and all the other movies that came out this week. And what do we got next week? We got, is it Furious time?
Furious 7.
Yeah.
Furious 7. There's a couple other films come out. The new Noah Baumbach film, While We're Young.
Oh, cool.
Comes out. A couple interesting films opening in limited release that look like they're worth checking out.
All right, cool. Very, very cool. Oh, man, Furious 7. Oh, man.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
Yeah, the year just ends for you.
I'm going to bust every chair in the theater.
Yeah, you are. You will. And I'm kind of with you.
I can't wait, and it's 2 hours and 17 minutes long.
Yes, it is.
By the way, did you guys see...
That's going to be one long runway again.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys see The Rock on SNL?
Best episode of the season.
It was unbelievably funny.
The first half up through Weekend Update and maybe the sketch with Robert Durst afterwards.
Yeah.
I've watched the restaurant sketch 4 times.
Such a great episode. Strongest one of the year, and The Rock was great on it.
Yep.
Really funny. All right. Well, Colin, Eric, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll review cars flying out of buildings and smashing into other buildings.
That's right.
Good.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, you guys, thanks a lot. There's Colin, there's Eric, and we've got more movie reviews coming up on Monday morning next week again.